Hi, everyone. Welcome to Baird's IPO Reboot series, where executives can learn the ABCs of going public. I'm Tom Shadwald. I'm a director on Baird's Equity Capital Markets desk based in beautiful Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In today's episode number 6, we will be talking about ESG considerations. I'm happy to be joined today by Matt Gartner from Sustainalytics. Matt, I'll pass it over to you if you wouldn't mind giving viewers a quick overview of your background.
Thanks, Tom. I'm a senior manager on Sustainalytics Corporate Solutions team. I'm based in Toronto. Our firm, for those of you not familiar, we're a pure play ESG and sustainability research company split into two sides. My side in the corporate solutions domain provides ESG solutions directly to corporates. So that could be providing a rating to a company that doesn't have one, solicited rating updates to companies that already have them, or data for benchmarking and gap analysis. I frequently work with private companies, either well in advance of an IPO or in the direct lead up to an IPO.
Great. Thanks, Matt. I think we'll just jump into the topic here straight away. So maybe the level set, I know you just kind of touched on it briefly, but could you give an overview of Sustainalytics products and offerings?
For sure. So for corporates, we have basically three branches of offerings. There's sustainable finance solutions, we have impact solutions, and then the rating and data solutions. And the last one is most relevant for ECM and IPO. So I'll start there and maybe round out the rest of what we do at the end. But for the ratings and the data side, there are basically two things to set the table with. For the ratings, specifically, we offer solicited ESG ratings for private and public companies. These can be confidential ratings that that a client just bilaterally shares with a bank or an investor or an advisor. Or these can be publicly available ratings that a client takes into roadshows or into an IPO if they want to integrate that into an investor prospectus. So in terms of use case, companies use our ratings for sometimes just a way to baseline their current performance to understand what gaps do I have, which ones are the most material to close, and then they come back to us with like a subsequent public rating that they can use. And sometimes companies just come to us for a public rating right out of the gate. Maybe they're on a more condensed timeline. The other piece of that, aside from the ratings that we focus on primarily, is the data side. So within that basket of products, in most cases, that's weighted gap analysis and benchmarking. And client wants to understand, just tell me what my most material gaps are and how we can close them, what my roadmap should be so that we can really focus. In other cases, some companies come to us for data that helps them with business development or supplier evaluation or screening partners or things like that. But that's the ratings and the data side. Again, those other two branches that we work on, to go back to the start, the sustainable finance piece, more so relevant for the DCM side, for companies issuing any sort of thematic debt. And then the impact solutions, similar, I guess, in scope a little bit to our ratings, in that it's a tool that clients can use to build a narrative for investors. But while our ratings tell a story that's based on ESG, like an ESG story, our impact reports tell a company's sustainability story. So we tend to have more companies that are, let's say, mission-driven organizations filling out the client base on the impact side.
Great. No, that's super helpful to level set kind of conversation. And I like to try to give our viewers as the most practical advice we can have, like in terms of takeaways. And so if I'm a private company and I'm thinking about doing an IPO, and I want to get a rating as part of that process, how does that kind of timeline and process overall kind of unfold with you and your team?
Yeah. So I guess starting with process, the most key thing, the kind of headline thing, is we don't use any surveys. It's pretty important for a lot of our clients just because ESG is a very, let's say, survey intensive space. So instead of doing that, we have analysts that evaluate a company's internal and external policies and documents. We basically do all the heavy lifting of evaluating those rather than making clients do it in the questionnaire. So at the start of working with us, we give our clients a full list of the documents that are going to be relevant for their rating. And then we give them some time to gather those before their project manager kicks off the process. Once we do kick off, the company, or I guess our analysts, prepare some draft reports for the company. Our clients then go through a couple of rounds of feedback so they can provide notes on, let's say, any omissions, or they can ask questions of our analysts. Basically, they have the ability to provide oversight and make sure that we're accurately reflecting their current maturity. After they provide the feedback, we then present to them the results, like we summarize the results of the rating. We help them understand how to read and use the report, and then also just contextualize their performance in relation to their industry. So that's the process from front to back. Again, a lot of us holding their hands. In terms of timing, the full rating process from start to finish lasts about 7 to 8 weeks. Again, we're very strategic in terms of borrowing time from our clients, so that most of that time period is our research team just doing a very thorough analysis. But the typical project length is 7 to 8 weeks from front to back.
Yeah, that's good to know, because you need to think about how to kind of weave that into your overall IPO timeline more broadly. It's not something that you can kind of do right at the last second. So if you are thinking about it, I think you should try to bring in the team as soon as possible to make sure that you can just sync up on timelines. And so maybe switching topics a little bit, in terms of the ESG policies that investors are most focused on, what are the ones that typically you guys talk about?
Yeah, maybe starting, I guess, from the 10,000 foot view and then working our way downward. But at the highest level right now, the most material concerns for investors are climate disclosures and the E part of ESG, I guess, to really oversimplify it. And maybe that's policy-based through a company's, let's say, environmental policy or their GHG reduction program, something like that. It could also be not policy-based, like a net zero pathway or alignment with a framework like the TCFD. It could also be, in some cases, just raw data, like emissions or carbon intensity or water use and water intensity that investors are looking for. It's some of what an investor is looking for in the climate space does depend on the industry or the vertical or the sector into which a company is classified. So for a real estate company, investors will be looking for information about green buildings and physical climate risk. For a mining company, you're also looking at like emissions, effluents, and waste, and community impact. But again, the environmental side, in whatever iteration of materiality is pertinent for an industry, is currently the primary concern. Zooming down a little bit further, kind of getting out of that 10,000 foot view, a little more granular, when we evaluate a company, like when we do a rating for a company, there are just some things, regardless of sector, regardless of whether it's a private or public company, that we evaluate. And these are things like a bribery and corruption policy, whistleblower programs, political involvement policies, verification of a company's ESG reporting, a discrimination policy, an environmental policy, and a number of others. But things like those, again, are material for companies, regardless of industry grouping. They're always going to be relevant.
Yeah, and I think a kind of question that you might get are in terms of like the most common gaps that you see as companies transition from that private kind of phase of their life cycle to the public phase. What are those gaps typically?
Yeah, I think frequently we see this as a gap. It's probably the hardest thing to stand up for private companies as they go public. It's full corporate governance documents. So again, to oversimplify, let's say the G part of ESG. These are often things that are not fully shaped until a prospectus is really in its final stages anyway, just with the way the timing works out. That said, when we rate a private company, there's only one instance in which we would evaluate them on a full suite of governance indicators, and that is the occasion where a company is filing for an IPO and wants to use their rating in a prospectus. But for a private company that works with us, one of the options we provide is the ability to decide if their rating is publicly available. So if they like the score, then we make it available and they can broadcast it. If they don't like it, they can ask us to keep it confidential and they're not obligated to use it publicly. But governance is a big piece. It's a big, yes, gap, but also just a difficult, heavy lift that private companies face. Another one would be things like certification. So let's say an environmental management system certification or ISO certifications. These are things that are highly specific. They're things that most companies just don't think about until much later in their ESG journey. So those tend to be gaps. And then maybe the last gap that I would highlight, I think, what's the best way to say this? There's gaps sometimes in formal policies while the programs are much more strong. So what I mean by that distinction is there's private companies are often doing a lot, really great things, and putting together ambitious measures to attack like big material ESG problems, but they're not necessarily formalizing those into lengthy documents that clearly define, okay, here's the oversight of this program, and here's an if-then scenario, and here's how we audited this program, and clear statement of the targets for these things. So I guess it's a matter of walking the walk before talking the talk. There's just not a lot of reporting back on what a potential gap is, reporting back on the great work that companies are doing.
I mean, that's a great point, because obviously a company with great culture that's very focused on these things, maybe it's just everyone lives and breathes it day to day. But when you come into the public spotlight, you really do need to codify a lot of this in writing and make sure you can kind of back check it on a go forward basis too. So like that's a really important point you just made for some of these private company executives.
Yeah. We see it take shape a lot, again, in the prospectus, but when companies are really proactive on it and they think about what are the next steps beyond just having these things around, these things that we do, building out disclosures is key. And I would also say they don't have to be flashy ESG reports that have gone through 10 levels of auditing or 10 committees and consultants reviewing all your programs to vet them against 5 competitors. Ultimately, it's like, are your policies strong? Do the programs have ambition behind them? Rather than whether a company is ticking every box or gaps are not terrible. Every company has gaps. It's just a matter of, as you say, codifying the work that's being done.
Maybe in terms of like recent trends, any new information investors or other people or consultants are requesting that they have historically haven't wanted, or any kind of new items that companies are thinking about reporting on or have started reporting on?
Yeah. Climate, again, probably starts the conversation here. Like Sustainalytics, just this is separate from our ESG ratings, but we're creating this whole kind of wing of research wrapped around low carbon transition and evaluating corporates on their TCFD disclosures. So whether it's from a regulatory standpoint, or it's just based on the mission of the organization, or it's the point of public opinion, it's predicting the needs of investors. I think corporates writ large are trying to do more on climate and environment. And what I've heard in my conversations is that they're with companies, obviously, is that they're trying to do it with sincerity and with responsible reporting rather than just chasing big, let's say, titles like carbon neutral, which was the trend for a little while. I think investor appetite also turning towards impact. So it's one thing to say, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, or our company is doing X, Y, and Z. It's another thing to show that this is what we've actually accomplished by doing these things. So let me take that out of the abstract a little bit. It's one thing to say we have really strong diversity programs and inclusion is a really core value of our business, and these are our favorite SDGs. It's another thing to say the dollars we put into this social impact project resulted in these specific outcomes, and we will continue to double down on and iterate on those outcomes. While investors obviously use data points to screen and filter and consider companies, and they use providers like us to get those data points, they also look at outcomes, increasingly so. And likewise, we as providers also look at outcomes through impact. And then maybe one last thing to say on this. I speak with a lot of companies that are just trying to wrap their head around what scope three is and what kind of an animal it will be for them. The guidance on that from even the GHG protocol is pretty vague, and companies would really prefer to have some idea of how to do it, even if it's an onerous thing to do. But scope three is something that companies are considering reporting, but right now many are unsure of how to gather the data and especially how to do it well or responsibly.
All great points. And I can say I'm learning a thing or two here on the call today as well. So, and then at the end of each episode, I like to ask the same question to each of the outside participants. And it doesn't have to be limited kind of to today's topic. You don't want it to be, but in terms of like the three most important kind of tidbits or pieces of advice you'd give a company that's thinking of going public, what are those?
Sure. I guess the first thing would be good ESG management is less of a nice to have than it is a must have once you become a public company, and increasingly so even before you go public. And it's not just about like reducing your GHG emissions. It's about building strong, diverse boards and reporting out on more information than your company's leadership probably considers material. And there are some stats that we have that track mentions of ESG and sustainability in S1 prospectuses filed to the SEC in like this year and this year and this year and this year. And you see real consistent growth in the number of prospectuses that integrate mentions of, again, ESG and sustainability before, of course, the IPO market hit a pause. So, of course, there are a lot of narratives attached to ESG, but given the momentum we've seen for private companies at all levels of maturity, wanting to come to us and get out in front of building out, let's say, their ESG scaffolding, it's not something that you can just figure out after the IPO, as it probably was a few years ago. The second thing, I guess I would say, again, maybe back to the governance point, it tends to be the most difficult set of ducks to get in a row. Like board structure, performance metrics and termination scenarios for your compensation programs, ownership and shareholder rights are just oftentimes things that people have never had to think about before. So the earlier that a company can get started with building out even the skeletons for those disclosures that you're putting together on that front, it could even be, to the extent that that information is known, the better off you'll be as you make your way to the IPO day. And then I guess the third last thing, I guess I gestured towards this earlier. It's a common misconception that from an ESG evaluation and rating standpoint that companies need to have 100% of the relevant documentation to do a rating, or that they need to have full integrated reports and glossy documentation for everything. We've worked with private companies that were totally new to ESG and went on a mini journey of setting out a confidential rating baseline before they even thought about broadcasting that rating publicly. Gaps exist, like I said earlier, gaps exist at every company, private or public. So if, let's say, a third-party assessment like one from Sustainalytics of a company's ESG practices is of interest, we do have some boilerplate documentation that I'm happy to distribute around for private companies that may or may not be considering an IPO. But again, gaps are not, companies should not be allergic to an ESG evaluation or even just working on ESG just because they have gaps or know that they will have gaps. That happens at companies the world over and of all sizes.
That's great. I think we'll end it with those nuggets of info for today. I'd like to thank Matt again for his time and participating. I'm sure all the insights you gave will be highly valuable for our viewers here. And if you'd like to get a hold of either Matt or myself, you can either find our contact info on our websites or shoot us a message on LinkedIn. And so thanks again, everyone. And thanks again to Matt.
Thanks, everyone.